when you start to unpack lack of ambition, it's really ignorance. I don't know how to. You know, I've got it to this far and I don't know how to get it any further. And then it's the unchallenged limiting beliefs. It's actually doing the inner work. So the business is only ever an expression of the leader of the business. If your internal narrative is such that I'm not really an entrepreneur, I've been lucky. I'm not really as good as Bill over there who's running a wonderful business. All of that narrative will keep you rooted to where you're at. So a big part of this is actually doing what they call the inner work. This is where practices like meditation become so important, just taking 5 minutes or 10 minutes of quiet time to actually tune into that internal chatter.
Welcome to Potent, the podcast where we explore transformative ideas and practices to help you live into your unique potential and build a more potent life. I'm your host, Stephen Lawson, a whole person productivity coach and the founder of Monk Manual. Today, I'm joined by my friend Brendan McGuigan, founder of ScaleX. Brendan is a global business leader who builds profitable, scalable businesses, delivering on his strong personal belief that if you have a wonderful product or service, then you have an obligation to bring that to the world. Over 17 years at the CDE Group, 12 of which is the CEO, he helped the company achieve 25x revenue growth. Currently, he's the host of the acclaimed podcast, ScaleX Insider, which is now ranked in the top 2.5% of podcasts globally, and is also the author of Simple Scaling, 10 Proven Principles to 10x Your Business, as well as being a third-degree black belt in Taekwondo and a Wim Hof method instructor. In spite of all these accolades, I invited Brendan to join me on Potent because he's someone who's personally trying to walk this path of potency. On today's episode, we cover behaviors for success, mindset, finding purpose in one's work, as well as what it takes to scale one's own life. I really enjoyed today's conversation, and I know you will as well. This podcast is brought to you by the Monk Manual. The Monk Manual is dedicated to providing best-in-class tools for helping you build a more potent life and experiencing peaceful being and purposeful doing on a daily basis. If you'd like to be more intentional with your time and energy, please visit monkmanual.com. All right, let's dive in. There's this amazing depiction of Walt Disney's business model. And I think it's an image from the 50s or something, but it shows how everything they do is interconnected, right? So they have the movies, which is linked up with the show, which is linked up with the licensing and the radio and the television, and it all funnels back into each other. So it creates this amazing ecosystem, which is fascinating because in some ways that's what they've been doing on repeat, right? They bought Marvel, there is Star Wars, right? Like they kind of just build up all these same things with the business model. So,
and if you examine that further, and I can't think off the top of my head Walt Disney's purpose, but everything's anchored back to their purpose. So our purpose is to inspire, connect, and enable ambitious leaders of small to medium-sized enterprises scale with purpose. So everything we do is aligned and congruent with that purpose. So that's the slide rule by which we assess any opportunity to support small and medium-sized enterprises. Will it inspire them? So this year, just 1 month past, we held a summit with 500 business leaders, Ireland's first business scaling summit in the ICC in Belfast. And the rationale for that was alongside the Inspire theme. So lack of ambition of the leader is cited as the single greatest impediment as to why small and medium-sized business owners don't scale. We thought, well, how do we ignite ambition within these leaders? Well, let's bring them to a wonderful venue and inspire them with really rich content from world-class speakers. And they're going to be ignited. They're going to leave inspired and compelled and motivated to want to take action. And ultimately, that will help mitigate this challenge of lack of ambition. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the community that we create, for example, the ScaleX Club, which is the club that our graduates of our ScaleX Accelerator program graduate into, that aligns to our Connect theme. So what we wanted to do alongside the Inspire, Connect and Enable, is create these connections, which I never had whenever I was scaling the previous business. I never had a community, a peer group, which I could lean on. And I always craved that. I craved that environment where you could speak with other like-minded scalers and work through your challenges or explore opportunities together. So that aligns itself to the Connect theme. And then when you think of the Enable, then the Enable is about actually providing content for people through the podcast. So I always host the podcast like a little mini masterclass, such that those listening can actually take practical action whenever they've listened to the podcast itself. The ScaleX Accelerator program is about enabling our participants with the tools and concepts and frameworks to actually support their scaling ambition. The ScaleX Investments, which is the investment arm of the business, again, is aligned to us enabling small and medium-sized business owners to scale with purpose. And ScaleX Talent Solutions, again, focuses on the enabling. So it's everything that I do, it's really, once you've actually arrived at your purpose, it's very, very easy then to assess opportunities, either filter them in or filter them out.
It's fascinating because you explain this threefold support of the inspiring, connecting, and enablement. And it's interesting that you put it in that order as well, right? Because a lot of individuals, I think on one hand, anyone who's trying to go and achieve things, oftentimes what they start with is the enablement factor. They try to figure out, how do I go and do this particular thing? And I noticed in Simple Scaling, I've got the book right here too.
Good on you.
You start with Inspire and you also end with Inspire. Why is the inspiration piece, and maybe I'm misreading this, but it seems like that's almost foundational.
I love the fact that you've actually taken the time to consider this. We thought about this long and hard. So within the framework itself, we have three phases by which the 10 principles are aligned to, and they're inspire, orientate, and accelerate. And the final principle, which is the keystone principle, sits back in inspire again, which is creating a positive growth culture. Because you can have a wonderful vision, a very compelling purpose, a great plan to execute on that. But actually, if you don't have an inspiring, positive growth culture, an environment which people feel inspired to actually unlock their best selves, then actually all of the rest of it falls down. And it's a virtuous circle because it never stops. Mm-hmm. It's not a case of, once we've gone around the ScaleX framework and addressed each of the 10 principles, that's us done. This is constant. You must be working on not only inspiring yourself initially, but inspiring those around you who will in turn create this inspiring environment, this culture, which ultimately cultivates and nourishes the plan by which you're executing towards a positive and compelling vision. So appreciate the question. Mm-hmm.
So for you personally, you really get the sense, because I've watched a number of your interviews as well, and I read your book on scaling. You talk about scaling with purpose, right? And you strike me as someone who is really motivated by purpose, that for you, the work you do is personal, the people you're serving is personal. How did that come about? Have you always just been interested in businesses and helping businesses, or did you see a particular opportunity where it connected with your skill set? What was that story?
It's a wonderful question. And it can go quite deep, but no, I mean, in my 20s, I trained to be an accountant. So my background was in finance, and coming from Ireland, growing up in the Troubles, I come from a family, neither my mum or dad were educated, but I'm one of five. And education was seen as a way to get out of the Troubles. So we were all educated to third degree. And I qualified as a chartered accountant, not that I had any great desire to be a chartered accountant as such, but I wanted a passport to travel. So the chartered accountancy qualification gave me that, and a conduit into business, a way that I could get into business. I always loved business from a young age. And very much in my 20s, it was about carving out a career. In my 30s, it was about building that career. I became CEO of a scaling business. It was just starting its scaling journey back in 2007. So much of my 30s were about scaling that business from... It was a small business whenever I came into, about 15 people. We scaled that to almost 700 and established offices in six continents. exported to more than 100 countries globally and became the number one business in its industry. So that was quite intense, and that took up my 30s. And it really was a challenge with my eldest daughter, and I can share this now because she's actually established her own podcast. But in recent years, she was diagnosed as neurodivergent. So she has high functioning autism. And that presented a huge, huge challenge for us as Anya was navigating through her teens. And whilst I was leading the scale up, I had this challenge at home, which wasn't really congruent to the plans that I had and the vision that I had for the business, which was to continue to grow and grow this business. And the challenges at home presented the question, why am I doing this? And that led to a deeper exploration of our why. And I found that actually what we were doing in the business context was really significant. So we were designing and manufacturing equipment to process sand and aggregate for the construction industry across the globe. And you think, well, there's nothing too purposeful about processing sand. Whenever you start to realize that actually sand is the most consumed commodity on the planet after air and water, we're consuming it at twice the rate in which the planet can sustain. It's used in every aspect of our life. This call couldn't happen today if we didn't have sand. It's enabled by a little quartz silica chip, which is derived from sand. The glass that I'm looking out of, the cup that I'm drinking out of, the screen that I'm looking into, all made of glass, which derived from silica sand. And the world is suffering a crisis in when it comes to actually being able to access reserves of sand. And we had developed a technology that supported the recycling of construction and demolition waste, which presented an alternative to natural sand. And whenever I explored this a little bit further, a little bit deeper, what I found was that after drug trafficking and money laundering, illegal sand extraction was the biggest financial crime globally. Hundreds of people are killed every year by illegal sand mafia, believe it or not, because they're extracting sand, natural sand, from in the dead of night from rivers and disturbing the ecology of local villages. Especially, this is rife in India, a market which we know very well. I'm still involved with a company there. And as I started to kind of develop an understanding of the importance of having purpose, you know, being away from my family, being away from my daughter, it was really important for me to understand, well, why am I doing this? At this stage, we'd achieved a certain amount of financial success. I had, you know, everything that I had ever wanted from a material perspective. So there had to be a reason why I was on board a plane on a Saturday evening to head to Calcutta for 2 weeks. And whenever I was leaving my daughter and my two children and my wife. So the exploration of purpose became critically important to developing a level of energy around what we were doing, not just growing for growing's sake, but actually doing something that made a positive impact in the world. And we went deeper. I then discovered the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, the 17 Sustainable Development Goals. I'd never heard of these before, but it turns out that 193 countries out of the 200 countries globally have actually signed up to these goals. When you think of all of the things that politicians disagree on, to actually come together and agree, here's things that we can do to create a better planet, better society, eradicate poverty, eradicate starvation. You know, all of these things are gone. And actually, we have a role to play here. So that was really interesting. I connected with an authority, a lady called Margo Hoek, who had written a book called The $1 trillion Shift. And her strap line was, business for good is good for business. I thought, we can actually continue to scale here and do good at the same time. And that struck me as something really, really powerful. And ultimately, we then coined post-retirement from the previous business, scaling with purpose. So absolutely, you know, we're wired to want to grow. We're wired to want to grow at a personal level and at an organizational level. But actually, there's a hollowness if you're just growing for growth's sake. Ultimately, you'll be found out. Once you arrive at a point where actually you've ticked the financial box, then it's case, well, what now? Why am I doing this? is you lack then the energy to get out of bed on that wet Wednesday in November when things are really tough if you don't have a purpose. Mm-hmm. So scaling with purpose is critically important as opposed to just scaling for scaling's sake.
Mm-hmm. There's a quote I love, and I believe it's by Edward Abbey, and it goes, growth for the sake of growth is the ideology of a cancer cell. And I remember the first time I read that, I thought, how interesting, because in the culture that I was raised in, and I think it's a predominant culture in the West, there's just an assumption that growing is inherently good. And the problem that can happen with that is that we can sometimes feed something in our lives maybe or grow a business without necessarily having it anchored to a purpose. I think the purpose piece is really important on one hand because that inspiration is so necessary to be able to really give of oneself fully. And as I can tell through the work you do, you know how important the entrepreneur themselves, the founder, the leadership is for enabling the business. It's not just the how, it's really the who, and there's some disproportionate impact a lot of times leaders can have on their whole organization, on their lives, on the futures in many ways of the people that reside within their businesses. But the other part of it is this anchoring in purpose. When we think about purpose, I think everyone is thinking about trying to create some good. Most times when there's some level of purpose, there's some relative good that we're moving towards. And that feels important as well because you have a lot of businesses that maybe can grow in influence, grow in power, but if they're not aligned with a sense of purpose, it might actually be a net loss for humanity.
And this is why scaling with purpose is so critically important. I shared with you our purpose. Our vision is to inspire, connect, and enable millions of ambitious leaders of small and medium-sized businesses to scale with purpose. And the with purpose is critically important in this. So just to pick up a few things that you said, I'm going to throw some stats at your listeners. So apologies for those who don't like statistics, but it'll help put it in some context. There are 5.7 million small to medium-sized businesses in the UK alone. Now, the UK is, what, a population of 70, 80 million. So you'll be able to get some context from a US perspective. But 5.7 million SMEs in the UK, and they're contributing £2 trillion worth of revenue to the UK economy. Half of that is coming from less than 30,000 companies, and those are the scaling companies. They're contributing £1 trillion of the £2 trillion worth of revenue. And more than 99% of companies by volume in the UK are small to medium-sized businesses. More than 70% of people who are in the workforce are working for small to medium-sized businesses. So the impact leaders have touches every corner of our society. They create this ripple effect, whether positive or negative. If they're leading consciously with purpose, then their energy, their inspiration, their sense of purpose, their ambition, that's going to be emitted to the people that are in their stewardship for the vast majority of a week, a month, a year. And that energy is going to be then taken by that person, and it will transmit not only to their customers, but actually when they go back home to their partners, to their children, to their friends, and it just ripples out. And if that's really positive, then that ripple just becomes a positive ripple. And that's where the positive impact to humanity, without overstating what we're doing here, but ultimately, given the fact that small and medium-sized businesses are at every corner. We only have to walk 100 yards and we're going to come into contact with small and medium-sized businesses. You know, if we have 10 of our friends around, 7 of those people are going to work for small and medium-sized businesses. This isn't about the Googles or the Amazons or the Facebooks, the businesses people know. It's about Fred down the road who has 25 people working in a furniture business. Now, Fred, the way he leads will have a direct impact on the lives of those people who come to work in his organization every day. And ultimately, if we encourage those leaders to scale with purpose, then when you start to understand that more than 80% of people in the latest Gallup surveys are actually disengaged in their workplace, can you imagine what we would unlock if those people were engaged in companies that scale with purpose? So the more we can cultivate companies that scale with purpose, not only do we impact positively those leaders themselves, but we will scale their teams of people that exist in their organizations on a daily basis. We will scale their organizations and ultimately their community, society, and economies of large benefit. And they will squeeze out those companies that are simply growing for growing's sake.
Mm. Yeah, that makes so much sense. And I can see from almost a strategic standpoint, if you're trying to maximize your own potential in a sense, right? If you're trying to say, hey, how does Brendan make the most positive impact on the world? There's so many secondary and tertiary effects to the work you're doing. So it makes a ton of sense. In some ways, it's not exactly the same. We do have a lot of entrepreneurs who are in the community here. But that dynamic you were explaining about how there's a small percentage of businesses that are responsible for a lot of the impact, a lot of the GDP, a lot of the growth in various ways. I think it's the same in some ways with people. Not that some people have more impact or less impact necessarily. I think everyone has a certain potency and everyone's got their circles of influence. But one of the things I love about the people that I get to serve is that I do think that they're individuals who are living, in general, a more inspired life, who have taken personal development relatively seriously. And because of that, there's a disproportionate impact. Like, there's a really high potential for their own creative generativity in the world, for their own ability to go and lead in different ways, whether that's in their community, whether that's in their family, whether that's in their business. Maybe they don't even have to be at the top of a business or even near the top, just kind of where they are located, right? Because there's always that opportunity for us to go and make an impact. I want to ask a question on that, because you're interacting with business leaders, founders all the time. And I imagine just by the fact that you're in the space waving the flag of scaling with purpose, it probably attracts certain people. But do you find a lot of times when individuals come to you, when you're working with companies, that do you find that most business leaders are highly aware of their own purpose, either in the business or individually? Or is that actually the primary sticking point that is the thing that leads to a lot of the scaling potential?
A lot of the people who are attracted into our worlds come in initially because they're stuck in their business. So they've arrived at a point where they're trapped in the bowels of the business and they want a way out of that and seek our support in helping them to get out of that. And actually, it seems paradoxical that doing more in the context of scaling, they can free themselves from actually being stuck in the bowels of the business. But scaling is doing more with leverage. Growing is doing more with more. So it depends on them having a mindset shift. But so we have some people who come into the community who want to free themselves. We have others who crave the ambition to actually scale their businesses, haven't really thought of scaling in the context of purpose, but actually want to do more and achieve more. There's very few who come in because they're attracted to the with purpose, but actually get a sense that this seems to be the right thing to do. So by the time they leave our program at the end of 12 months, they have language around this, but very few come in with the language already articulated. And people get caught on purpose and go, well, look, I'm selling rugs online. How can I make that purposeful? You know, look, I'm buying and reselling rugs. And you go, well, purpose can be thought of in a different context, kind of three different ways. You can think of purpose in the context of your competence. So maybe you're an entrepreneur who has invented a wonderful product or designed an incredible service, and you feel that you can disrupt an entire industry if you bring this product or service to the world. So ultimately, you're purposeful around creating a competency which ultimately will elevate you to become the best at what you do. And that's really purposeful. If the product or service that you're actually selling brings positive value to people, it's either solving a problem or servicing a need for the good. So that's in the competence side. Take that same company that's selling rugs. They may not find purpose in terms of the actual product, but actually they may find purpose in the culture that they're creating. So say, actually, what we have here is not necessarily a purposeful product as people would perceive it, but actually what we're creating is a culture which actually supports people to unlock their best potential. So we're going to lead this company really differently. You know, it's a traditional industry, but actually we're going to do something really differently, which will see us being revered in the industry as a company who has a wonderfully positive culture. And that's purposeful. So you can actually craft your purpose around your culture. And then we come into cause. And when I talk about cause, people, you know, we can think of examples like Patagonia. You know, Patagonia is revered for the work that it does now around environmental activism. But when you actually track Patagonia's journey, founded by Yvonne Chouinard decades ago, his purpose started off with actually creating the best piton he could for rock climbing. So it focused on the competence. He then inspired others who were really energized by what he was doing within that community. And he created a culture which was very unique around the development of that product, which eventually led to the development of a company which is now multi-billion dollar SureCap that allows them to actually contribute to environmental causes. So they've gone through this development of competence, culture, cause. It started off with purpose with a very small P, just focused on developing the best piton that he could.
So I love seeing how similar businesses are to people, because I think there's just so much overlap. And I think that some things don't port over exactly, but a lot of things that make, say, a business work or flourish are similar to what makes a human being work and flourish, right? When you even talk about something like positive culture, it's like, okay, we have our own internal culture ourselves, right? If you were to listen to a boardroom versus listen to the boardroom in your head, both matter and both are going to have certain types of language that's going to work better, certain ways of thinking that's going to work better. And I do think people probably have a different starting points, because I think some people maybe begin with more of that emphasis on impact on people. And that's almost the core driver from the beginning. I think a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of people are driven by starting with that competency of finding purpose in their competency. But then you start seeing maybe there's a larger hole here that I also want to be considering, or there's just a reevaluation of certain things. I think that that is something you end up finding often, where people begin with finding some purpose in personal competency, personal mastery. Maybe then they go into thinking about impact on people, the spaces that they're creating. And then even broader than that, just what is the ultimate good that's being created in the world? And I think that, again, some people maybe start at different phases, but are most entrepreneurs able eventually to integrate all three? And is that where they really reach their peak? Kind of getting them to fire on all cylinders of all three levels of purpose, is that where they really start kind of taking off?
That's a great question. Let me bring it back a little bit. You talked about people are like businesses in many respects. And just to explore that a little bit further, companies aren't real things. They're a collection of people. You know, back to that old Zig Ziglar quote, which I love, you don't build a business, you build people, and people build a business. So it's all about the people. And I would assert that you can only build the people in your stewardship to the extent that you're focused on building yourself. You know, if you think of the etymology of the word company, it's actually two Latin words, the cum, which is actually togetherness, and panis, which is breaking bread. So essentially, it's a coming together of people who are breaking bread with a shared purpose. But we've lost that along the way with a societal framework which is driven towards quarterly results. But we've lost the, in many respects, the origins of why people came together in the first place was actually with a shared purpose, to do something together, an exchange of value in some way. The question, do we have to have the competency, the culture, the cause, all congruent in order to actually make real impact? Well, I look at Patagonia as an exemplar, and they have all three. But this isn't a case of, for your people listening to this, for your listeners who are leading businesses, oh, look, I have a small business. There's only five people in my business. Patagonia, as an example, is too abstract. I would say start with your kitchen. You know, how many times are you using plastic cups or plastic straws that you're dumping in the bin. Is there something that you could do there that would be just a little bit more responsible? And I use that language, responsible. I had the wonderful privilege of interviewing Vincent Stanley, who was one of the foundational employees. He's actually a cousin of Yvonne Chouinard, who founded Patagonia. And I interviewed Vincent Stanley for the podcast. I think Vincent was like the third or fourth employee. He's now in his 70s, an incredible man. And he co-authored a book with Yvonne Chouinard called The Responsible Company. And in the back of that book, he gives like 190 practical ways in which we can become responsible. And it doesn't mean to say we all have to go out there and kind of hug trees and save the world. Just start with how you conduct yourself, how you organize yourself in the context of leading your team, how you model behaviors, which are responsible behaviors, which will ultimately be modeled and replicated by those in your stewardship. No one ever started a large company with a wonderful cause. They all started small. So just start where you're at and start to consider how you could become more responsible in the context of the product or service that you're developing. What does our supply chain look like? Could we incorporate more recycled materials into the manufacture of the product? The biggest waste in every business is actually the waste of human potential. So actually, could we create an environment when we get onto culture which seeks to unlock the potential within the people that we already have? And then maybe we actually build a company such that we become profitable beyond what we'd planned, and we seek to actually contribute some of those profits to causes that we're passionate about, or our team are passionate about, put it out to the team. So I think ultimately the focus and the framework of the three C's in the context of purpose is important, but I don't want it to be conveyed so abstract that people go, well, that's not for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes total sense. And it's interesting because this idea of maybe liberating purpose, what you were saying about in a business, often the thing that's the biggest drain or the biggest draw or waste is not really tapping into people's individual potential. And I don't think I've ever actually shared this, but a part of my own purpose or motivation for the Monk Manual, even doing this podcast, is this idea that the people who are attracted into the work that I've participated in, been blessed to be able to participate in, they're good people. They're good people, and they tend to be ambitious good people. And I would say I'm almost naturally empathetic, right? It's like I'm one of those people who it's difficult to watch the news. I just don't like hearing about all the darkness in the world. Not because I don't want to accept that it exists, but I don't love that feeling of there's just so much of it, and there's such a sense of my own finitude, my own inability to really address just how many pressing issues there are. So what motivates me is a feeling of, through the work I'm doing, potentially I can go and help individuals liberate their purpose a little bit more, empower them a little bit more, inspire, connect, enable them a little bit more. In that sense, I can make a larger impact, probably much more than just even giving a donation to this charity or doing this or that. Because I do think it's the people, right? It's like, how do you go and find those people, especially the people who have maybe the, I don't want to say strength of will, because I don't think it comes down to will, but there's a certain, yeah, maybe ambition. There's like a hunger there, and that hunger can be really, really destructive or can be really, really constructive. And so that's one of the motivations for me. I want to ask you, as a follow-up to that last point that you were making, from an outside perspective, it's probably easy to think, well, the reason it's not scaling is there needs to be new strategies or there needs to be this or that. But in my experience, a lot of times we're all going through these ongoing growth cycles in our life where we kind of, it's like a hermit crab that kind of builds its shell of its identity and feels kind of comfortable in there. But then at a certain point, there's kind of growing beyond it and it doesn't feel comfortable as much. And they realize, hey, what's wrong? And you feel stuck because you actually are kind of stuck in this shell that's no longer the right size for you. But what's difficult is anytime you want to go and venture out and change things, reinvent yourself, reimagine what's actually possible for yourself, it's really scary because you're entering into the unknown. You don't know, maybe I will fail. And it strikes me that for a lot of entrepreneurs, any individuals who are trying to scale, one of the difficulties is actually the reimagining of self that's necessary in order to even step into that, because the person who runs, say, a $100 million business is not the same person who runs a $10 million business, because they're not the same company. They're the same. They might be selling the same things, but it is not the same thing. It's like a jet ski versus a cruise liner. It's not the same thing. They're both on the water, but not the same. Do you find that that's a core aspect of the work, of kind of helping them to rediscover maybe a greater potential for themselves?
Yeah, this is a great question. We assert that you will never scale beyond the framework of your own identity, which is why psyche is the very first principle of scaling. Your own psyche, which is essentially the coming together of your beliefs, your habits, your thoughts, will either empower the other nine principles of scaling or disempower. The greatest force of the human personality is our desire to stay consistent with our own identity. So ultimately, we spend a lot of time delving into the belief system which the entrepreneurs have. And we've actually defined four personas of those who don't achieve scale. And one of those personas is what you're alluding to, the comfort zone warrior. The person who has arrived at a place, has achieved a level of success, and has the trappings with that success, and is actually now stuck because they don't want to risk what they have, but actually there's this little voice in their head saying, there's more in you, there's more in you, but they're pulled, the fear of, potentially the fear of success, depending on their own paradigm, their own belief system, the fear of judgment that they're being applauded in the local community because of their success, and they don't want to risk the accolades that they're currently getting because of the perceived risk of scaling this further. So they get stuck, and we call it the comfort zone warrior. And in many respects, it's a really challenging place to be, because in those quiet moments, they know, they harbor this desire to do more, but actually the belief system that they hold in terms of that judgment, that fear of failure, is so strong that actually they get rooted to where they're at. So once you start to challenge those limiting beliefs, and certainly we would assert that ignorance and unchallenged limiting beliefs, you know, when you start to unpack lack of ambition, it's really ignorance. I don't know how to, you know, I've got it to this far and I don't know how to get it any further, which is where the ScaleX framework comes in, because it's actually a roadmap, a how-to roadmap. And then it's the unchallenged limiting beliefs. It's actually doing the inner work. So you can never scale a business beyond the level of personal scaling. The business is only ever an expression of the leader of the business. So if you believe that you cannot scale this business beyond $2 million revenue, you won't. If you believe that your ceiling is $10 million, if that's where your thermostat sit, that's where you'll peak out. If your language, if your internal narrative is such that I'm not really an entrepreneur, I've been lucky. My parents gifted me this business. I'm not really as good as Bill over there who's running a wonderful business. I don't think we could take this product or service to another state. All of that narrative will keep you rooted to where you're at. So a big part of this is actually doing what they call the inner work, to really examine your own self-image, your own self-story. What is that self-story? In the quietness of time with yourself, in those moments of solitude, is this a friend inside your head? Is it encouraging, or is it quite parasitic in terms of how you're criticizing and limiting where you're trying to get to? And this is where practices like meditation become so important, just taking 5 minutes or 10 minutes of quiet time to actually tune into that internal chatter. I interviewed a wonderful gentleman, Dr. Jim Lear, who's authored 17 or 18 books. He has coached like 5 of the number one world tennis players, including Novak Djokovic. And he said, the tone and content of your inner voice will ultimately determine the quality of your life. And taking that further, it will ultimately determine the extent of your scaling in the context of the organization that you're leading. And it's cited that 60% of our belief system is actually negative. So when you start to really understand that, this becomes exciting, challenging and exciting, the fact that actually I have so much more potential within me. But what leaders tend to do is point the finger that it's, I can't get the people. You know, we can't get into those new markets. It's difficult out there at the moment. There's inflation, there's high interest rates. It's everybody else's fault. It's the economy's fault. When the reality is there are always people and companies and organizations who thrive in those challenging times. Why is that the case? And I suspect when you examine the psyche of the leaders of those organizations, it's very different than the psyche of those who are not achieving scale at the moment. So this becomes really exciting when you say, well, okay, in the context of inner work, what do I have to do? Well, it's beginning to become more self-aware about your self story and examining that and understanding that much of the belief system that we uphold isn't our own. Aristotle said, give me the boy until he's seven and I'll show you the man. We are in a theta state, a brain state, for the first 7 years of our life. Everything that we believe has been impressed upon us and is now controlling what we do, in terms of we have two minds. We have the conscious mind, the subconscious mind. They say by the time you're 35, 95% of what you do is habitual. It's leveraged on the belief system, which we've inherited from our parents, which we've inherited from the schooling system, which we've inherited from the environment that we grow up in. None of us were born with a religion. Mm-hmm. None of us were born with a political persuasion. Mm-hmm. And think of the beliefs that people uphold just around politics and religion, and then just begin to examine that, which are very tangible. But actually, what about the belief system you have in relation to success? Were you told growing up that actually you should keep your head down? That money is the root of all evil, because people will associate money with successful businesses. So maybe you haven't examined actually the fact that, well, we grew up listening to money is the root of all evil. So I now start to understand why I reach a certain level of success and I seem to implode. Now I'll blame it on other things, that I can't get the people, I can't, you know, the market's difficult, but ultimately the business is only ever an expression of the leader of that business.
It's fascinating because in my work coaching with entrepreneurs, and just even in personal relationships, what you do see, and it's so much easier to see it from the outside than I think when you're in it, because I know I do this as well, is you can see how much limiting beliefs, or just maybe even false beliefs, things like what you were just describing, where maybe someone has a story in their mind that making money actually makes you bad, or that the way to make money is always tied to some sort of dishonesty or something of that nature. Now, you can encounter those individuals, and I've seen this firsthand, where in some ways, subtly, they're sabotaging their own business, or it's like they're unintentionally, intentionally holding it back, and they're not even aware of it. I mean, they don't even see that the reason they're not actually able to grow in one capacity is because on one level, they don't want to. On one level, growing means that they have to, it runs in opposition to a value that's not even fully conscious to them. And they certainly didn't create themselves, right? That's such a difficult thing for us to navigate. That's why I imagine the community aspect is really important in the work you're doing as well. Is that right?
You're absolutely spot on, Stephen. I would assert that it's incredibly challenging, nigh impossible to scale if you're not in an environment that's conducive to scaling. So it's a little bit like trying to become a professional swimmer, having never been part of a swim club, having never had a coach to teach you, to give you feedback on your stroke, to be around other high performing swimmers. How many people have ever won the Olympics having never been part of a club where they have been around high performing people within that discipline. And scaling, again, when you go back to the stats, less than, it's about 0.6% of small and medium sized businesses are actually achieving scaling. The vast majority of other small and medium sized business leaders that you'll speak to are really struggling with scaling. So find yourself, if you have a desire to scale, get yourself into a scaling club, get yourself into a community where there are other like-minded leaders who have aspirations to scale, who are talking a language which is about scaling themselves to ultimately scale their teams, which will ultimately scale their organization, which isn't alien to others, because 99% of the people that you speak to, going by the stats, will find the language that you're speaking, if you have a desire to scale, contrarian and conflicting with where they're at. So, and again, you mentioned the point about not listening to the news. I never listen to the news, because again, the news medium is negative. It's always going to be negative. It always has been negative, and is not conducive to building confidence, which is required to scale. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, scaling mm-hmm. requires belief. Belief requires confidence, and confidence needs evidence. And what a community of people will do for you is actually showcase to you the evidence that suggests that actually you can scale your business. Take our program mm-hmm. this year. Mm-hmm. Prior to one business leader coming on, I had a conversation. I knew this person had a desire to come into the community, but was reluctant. There was a number of conversations that didn't really stack. It was probably the third conversation in when he disclosed to me that he had dyslexia and that he was labeled as disruptive at school, labeled as somebody who was stupid. And his words to me were, "I don't feel I'm smart enough to come in to your community, to come into the program with the other business leaders that are there." Mm. It actually gives me chills whenever I say that again. I convinced this person that actually that was a limiting, self-limiting belief, that he did not have to internalize what he'd been told whenever he was younger, but that there was actually a stack of evidence since his entrepreneurial journey to suggest that actually he was more than competent, he was more than fit, he was more than appropriate to come into the community. And once he came in, this guy has just excelled. But he had to examine the belief system that he had internalized, that he had held on to, and move beyond that. So the community, the environment that you actually put yourself into, I feel is paramount. It's back to the Jim Rohn quote, you know, you become the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And there's research to support that now that that is actually the case. For me, that's so critically important. So no one will ever get up from their seat after listening to an hour of the news and say, "Wow, I feel so inspired to create a wonderful vision for my organization. Oh my goodness, I'm so motivated." You'll get up after listening to an hour of news content, walk in, and your energy level will be fairly flat. You will have a conversation with your partner to convey how dire the world is. That energy will be transmitted to your kids, who will also pick up that the world is a really negative, dark place. And you will probably batten down the hatches within your business to protect what you already have, because it's really, really gloomy out there and now is not the time to do anything bold or exciting. Mm-hmm. Contrast that to an environment which isn't the news, which is an environment where you walk in and there's 30 people in a room who are just sparking off one another. They're energizing one another about what they're doing within their businesses, how they're developing new products and services, how they're entering into new markets, how they're embedding processes and systems, how they're supporting their leadership team to develop and grow, how they're unlocking potential within their people. That's very, very different. You can't not be energized and come away going, "Oh my God, I want some of that." We can do that in our organization. The content you choose to consume, the environment that you choose to put yourself into, the people you decide to surround yourself with is so critically important in the context of scaling. That's why so very few companies ever scale, because again, they will have limiting beliefs about moving away from the existing network that they have, which actually isn't serving them at the moment.
Yeah, I want to take a second to personalize this for people listening, because I know we do have a lot of individuals who are entrepreneurs, business leaders, but there's a lot of people who aren't as well. And even if you're not, say, an entrepreneur, I'm a big believer that we're all, in a sense, the entrepreneurs of our own lives, right? We're enterprising, as it were, our own internal culture, the cultures of our families, the cultures of our community, but we're making choices. We have a vision, a purpose. We have a lot of agency in our own life and what we want our experience of life to be, what we want our gift to the world to be. And I think that a similar principle applies around community for people who are trying to scale their business as people who are trying to scale their life. And I think it is a really common difficulty for individuals to find a good community, to find the people who maybe when you're just around them, you say, yeah, I just want more of that. But it is so critically important, because very, 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 very few people are able to really grow, reach their own inner potential without being in some sort of relationship or community that's holding them and modeling things, right? It's like, if you think of a monk, there's a reason why monks would live in community and they could go and kind of work together in a general direction. And there is such a thing as like hermits, right? There is the option to just kind of be the lone person who's out there, but that's also a pretty fragile, or can be a fragile way of approaching things. It's a more difficult path. Doing it on your own is a more difficult path. It's usually a slower path. And there's just in general more dangers, ways that you can self-delude. Because the thing about relationships is they're by nature real, right? The people that you're around, it's concrete. They have other data points. They reveal things to yourself about yourself. Whereas when we're on our own, we can kind of imagine that things are different than they actually are, right? It's like someone can think they're generous, but you're not really generous in isolation. You're generous in relationship. So it all comes down to that practical piece. I want to ask a question about that, because I think sometimes you find high achievers actually becoming individualistic or almost being afraid of community. I've been at events with entrepreneurs and looked around when a presenter's talking and I see everyone with kind of their arms crossed like this, almost like they're very individualistic, or they can be, right? It's a broad stroke to say that. But what have you found successful for helping to maybe create a community where there could be ego, or even there could be insecurity, right? Because sometimes your insecurity just gets triggered by being around people who have already done it or are doing it. Have you found anything effective to making that community be a place where people feel like they can really bring their whole selves and ultimately get to work?
That's a great question. I'm smiling as you say that. I love the phrase, we're all entrepreneurs of our own lives. And I truly believe that we're all the CEO of our own lives. And if you look at the different components of our lives, you've got your physical health, your mindset or mental health, key relationships, and then your business, your finances. So it's examining what great looks like in the context of those four pillars. And business success is only one of those pillars. But scaling a business at the expense of your health is futile. For us, it's really, really important that when we encourage people to embark on that journey to summit scale Everest, as we term it, we want them to do it with a level of joy, flow, and ease, to arrive at the summit having felt tension and challenge along the way, because it's only with that tension and challenge that you're going to experience true growth, personal growth, team growth, organizational growth. And what we want is people to arrive at the summit to having felt challenged but hugely accomplished, because they're a different person at the summit than they were at the base. And their team arrives with them saying, we can't comprehend how we've arrived here. This is incredible. It was really challenging along the way, but we've grown as a team. And everybody, you know, gets around in a huddle, celebrates that, and looks then for the next summit to climb. But if they arrive to the summit of Scale Everest and they're destroyed, they're frazzled, they're a shadow of their former selves. They've dragged their team member and lost some of the team going up the side of the mountain. And their team are looking at them distraught, going, why did you take us up here? It hasn't been worth it. So to actually do this at the expense of your health is really futile. Going back to the question, remind me again, because I went on a sidetrack there, because I'm really passionate about people being CEO of their own lives and people actually focusing on their health and well-being as the primary pillar by which everything else is, it's foundational by which everything else is built upon. What was the direct question, Stephen?
Yeah, it was, how do you create a community where individuals actually feel like they can maybe most authentically be themselves, that they can deal with the insecurities that come up with being around people who maybe are thriving in ways you're not?
So we do something very, very specific. So when people come into the program, I talk about following the map. And the methodology is the ScaleX framework, the 10 principle framework. Our approach is very much one where it's about leading self first before you lead others, before you lead an organization. And the practice is a practice which I've come to uphold as foundational in my own life and profoundly changed my life, which is the Wim Hof method. For those who aren't aware of the Wim Hof method, essentially it focuses on three pillars. One is breathing. One is cold exposure, and the third is mindset. Wim Hof is a Dutch extreme athlete, but essentially someone who has overcome a huge amount of trauma in his own life and developed breathing practices, cold exposure, and mindset practices to actually navigate life, as he talks about it, being happy, healthy, and strong. I could dive deep into the science of why we say happy, healthy, and strong, but essentially the breathing practices help reduce inflammation in the body, which actually leads to us becoming healthier. Whenever we go into the cold exposure, it releases lots of dopamine, helps reduce inflammation, releases serotonin, which is a feel good, which helps us become happier. And strong is really the resilience that we have to demonstrate, the practice of getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, which is a metaphor for scaling in itself, to actually decide to get into an ice bath. So I know there's lots of stuff on YouTube there, and doing ice baths is all very cool at the moment, but actually the practice of being intentional about getting into an ice bath helps develop the resilience muscle, helps develop this mindset where you can do hard things in the context of scaling, where you actually get comfortable with being uncomfortable. So your question is, how do we arrive at a point where, you know, you've lots of these high profile entrepreneurs coming into this beautiful estate in the first few workshops, and I mean, beautiful cars in the car park, everybody immaculately dressed. How do you arrive at a point where we kind of get beyond the egos? And we all have an ego, but to get beyond that, where we actually get to the true authentic leader themselves. Well, whenever you put a group of people in their swimwear standing in front of an ice bath, I can tell you the ego drops very, very, very quickly. And whenever a group do that together, they've gone through the breathing practice together and they've shared a bonding experience in the context of actually doing the ice together, the ego mask just disappears. So it's very, very deliberate in the context of the program that we run. And that's something, it's aligned to psyche and it's a thread that runs right through the 1 year program. And we go deeper, you know, as the program develops in terms of their practice, the breathing practice, the cold exposure. In fact, I'm taking a group of CEOs up Mount Snieżka in Poland, which is one of the highest mountains. It'll be kind of close to minus 20 in February up there in their shorts. And kind of that has been a journey of years to the point where now you've got this group of leaders who want to challenge themselves in the context of becoming better leaders, that ultimately they can unlock the potential with themselves, which means that actually they're better placed to unlock the potential within their team and ultimately get the best out of their organization. So
now this is going to be my last question, but you had mentioned the Wim Hof method. Other than that, other than the cold exposure, the breathing, are there any particular habits or practices that you found is kind of maybe like keystone habits or aspects of your life that are just really foundational that you've come to realize as you've grown, as you've gone from one hermit shell to another, I imagine multiple times. And I even get the sense that in real time, right, that that's part of who you are, right? That you're always growing a bit, right? Cycling a bit into that next iteration. Have you found any particular practices that for you just work really well to keep you in a highly inspired state, in a state of positivity, in a state of orientation towards meaning and engagement with your tasks of life?
So I've been fascinated with this. The rationale for the 10 Principle Scale X framework was to create a set of principles which are reflective of success patterns of those companies who have achieved scaling. And we spent years researching, leaning on our own experience from 20 years of being in scaling companies, leading scaling businesses. And I interviewed people from right across the globe in terms of their own scaling experience to define, along with my co-author Claire, to define the 10 principles of scaling. I have also looked for patterns that undergird success in life in general. And I've played around with a lot of things. So some of the things that really serve me now, like you mentioned earlier, I don't watch the news. So I choose the content that I listen to. I love, why am I doing this podcast today? I love podcasts as a medium. I feel there's huge benefit in actually choosing the material that you want to listen to, which is positive material. People who have been there and done it before you, who are willing to share their time and their experience to support you and what you're trying to do. The news doesn't want to do that. So when you can spend, you know, an hour listening to a podcast to somebody who is positively inspired about the road that you're about to travel, well, then that's only going to serve you. And I do that typically, big part of my routine. So reading every challenge that you will ever encounter or any opportunity that you want to explore, somebody has been there and done it and written a book about it. And they've spent years writing a book about it. And I can tell you, as somebody who has co-authored a book, it isn't for the money. There is no financial reward in writing a book. So any book that you can get your hands on by somebody who's been there and done it, please, 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 I would inspire people to start to embed reading in their regular routine. The practice inspired by the monk manual, the practice of capturing gratitudes in the morning. So whenever you're in a state of gratitude, people say, this is all a little bit Pollyanna-ish. It's all a bit trite. And you go, well, when you're in a state of gratitude, you cannot be in a state of anger or judgment or frustration. It changes your state, and your state is everything. Your mental state will determine how you actually approach the day. It'll determine how you respond when you're stuck in traffic. It'll determine how you react whenever you hear difficult news from one of your employees. It'll change how you interpret the latest challenge that you're facing within the business, maybe the latest challenge that you're facing at home, whatever. Once you change your state through the practice of gratitude, ultimately, I found that the quality of my life has improved immeasurably. And I love starting off the day with the gratitude practice, but bookending the day, again, taken from the monk manual. I love this, capturing three wins or three highlights from the day. So you're waking up in the morning, and typically my routine at the moment, I'll wake up, I'll do 10 minutes of a guided breathing practice, the Wim Hof breathing practice. I typically do 10 minutes of meditation, again, as a guided meditation from the Primed app. The guy called Elliot Rowe developed it. And then I'll go into the gym. Movement is medicine. So getting the body moving will ultimately, again, change your state. And when I'm in the gym, I listen to a podcast of my choice. So I'm not only exercising my body, but I'm also exercising my mind at the same time. So before I let the world in on myself, you know, within an hour and 15, I'm already 1-0 up on the world and I haven't let anything in. And then I'll make a coffee, I'll go and sit down, I do the gratitudes. And then I let the world in. And then I'll switch on the computer. Then I'll kind of go into my social media feed. but already I'm in a great state to receive that as opposed to, I can respond to that as opposed to react to being the puppet to somebody else's agenda for that day. I can set my day. Another great practice from the Monk Manual is actually setting your three priorities for the day. What is it that I want to achieve, which at the end of the day would make this a great day? The practice of capturing those on a daily basis and reflecting on your highlights at the end of the day and then going back. So typically on a Sunday, I'll sit down, I'll take maybe 30 minutes and reflect then over the course of the week to capture my wins for the week. And then you do that on a monthly basis. You do it on a quarterly basis. So what you're building is this stack of unrefutable evidence that actually what you're doing here is making progress. Momentum creates momentum. I just love reflecting back and going, my goodness, look at the progress that we have made personally and as a team. And it's a practice actually we have captured within our team as well. We talk about opening up the week with calibration and ending the week with celebration. So we have a Monday morning meeting, a check-in. And again, somebody guides a little 5-minute box breathing practice amongst the team. And we'll go around the room. We'll do gratitudes amongst the team as well. And then we'll align on our priorities for the week. And we'll ask each other, is there anyone else that needs support this week in the context of their priorities, aligned to our vision? And at the end of the week, we always capture the wins of the week. The last thing we do is a celebratory email every member of the team who will cite 3 wins from that week. And it's so, so, so powerful. So simple, but so powerful. So number of things, reading, the breathing, the meditation, exercise, the gratitude journal, and the preparation in the evening of celebrating and capturing your wins or your highlights from the day and setting your priorities for the next day. Again, I find this so critically important. And I've written an article before on things that make good sense. Just generally, sense is an acronym for sleep, exercise, nutrition, self-care, and the E is the environment that you put yourself into. So we could do a podcast alone on routines and rituals and practices, Stephen, but hopefully that gives you a sense of what has served me.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful. And I'm sure we could. I want to preempt something where I can imagine some people who are maybe listening, just given their circumstances of life, they think about your routines in the business and even personally and think, oh, that's great, but maybe I can't afford that amount of time to do these sorts of things. It's funny because when you hear it and you're like, oh, 10 minutes for meditation, 10 minutes for breathing, 10 minutes, and then you're exercising too. And there's a lot of practices that when we're doing them, or maybe from an outside perspective, can seem like a luxury until you really start doing them and you realize that it just completely transforms your ability to actually move forward in life, right? We have this illusion in our mind that we're limited by time, and we are limited by time, but often we're actually limited by inspiration, by energy, by engagement. It's not specifically time. We waste a lot of time. We spend a lot of time trying to control things. A lot of time is not well spent. So the things that Brandon is explaining, extremely pragmatic.
Well, let me just gift the listeners with 10 weeks that they didn't have prior to this call. 10 full weeks. So there's 365 days in the year. Now, what I've chosen to do is to go to bed 1 hour earlier at night, because I found that the hours after kind of 9 o'clock for me, and this is just a personal choice, were junk hours. Tended to have kids in bed. Mm-hmm. And I would find myself sitting in front of the TV, flicking through stuff that really I had no interest in. It was just mindless scrolling, maybe sitting with a laptop on my knee at this stage of night. I'm not being productive at that point. So I decided to gift myself and take back one of those junk hours and invest that in the morning. So I've actually swapped out an hour in the evening for an hour in the morning, which translates to 365 hours a year, which is essentially 10 working weeks that I've gifted to myself, that I've decided to invest in myself. Mm. It's just a time swap. I've made a choice that I don't want to sit late at night and watch the news before I go to bed. I don't want to scroll on the TV. I don't want to scroll on my phone. I'd rather go to bed a little earlier, maybe read for 10 minutes, do my journaling, and actually get a good night's sleep, which allows me to get up an hour earlier in the morning and do the routine before the rest of the world wakes up, invest that time in me, back to leading self first, which ultimately has a positive impact on the others that come into contact with me and ultimately, hopefully, the organization that we're leading now, which is Simple Scaling. I'm a parent of three teenagers. It's a busy life. It's not a case of, well, that's fine for him. He's not married. He's not, you know. Mm-hmm. I can empathize with everyone who is leading a busy life, but ultimately this is about choice. Somebody said to me before, you know, life is about the C between the B and the D. Life is about the choices we make between birth and death. And everyone has the same 24 hours a day, but ultimately it's what you choose to do with those 24 hours, which I feel will ultimately determine the what you achieve in life. And we all have that choice. I just choose to not spend time scrolling in the evening, and I invest that in the morning. And that has really served me.
Mm-hmm. Brendan, thank you so much. I want to recommend again Brendan's book, Simple Scaling. It's one of those things where from a distance, a lot of us can navigate life and think, well, you know what? I can go on Google. I can go and figure this out on my own. And a lot of times you can figure things out, but what we miss is that there's a lot of complexity in actually creating something or engaging things where someone's just done the hard work of taking what's complex and making it simple can be a gigantic gift, and it can help propel us forward so fast. So if you're a business owner, if you're a business leader, or if you're just interested in trying to take some of the principles that you find work in businesses for scaling businesses and apply those to your own life, and I promise you, if you're creative, you will see overlap. Definitely check out Simple Scaling. And Brendan, where can people find more about what you're doing and about your work?
Sure. Thank you, Stephen. Well, you can go onto our website at simplescaling.com. You'll find more information about the book, the podcast, the program, some of the things that we're up to there. Also, I'm active on LinkedIn. So Brendan McGurgan on LinkedIn. We're on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, but primarily, if you check out the website and then connect with me on LinkedIn, I'd love to hear from your listeners to understand what has resonated with them today.
Thank you so much, Brendan. This has been wonderful.
Likewise. Luke, thanks for having me on, Stephen. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of Potent. If you'd like to learn more about Brendan and his work helping entrepreneurs and their businesses get to the next level, visit simplescaling.com or check out his podcast, ScaleX Insider. I invite you to take a moment now to identify something from today's episode that you'd like to change or incorporate into your life as a result of what you heard today. Don't let ideas stay ideas. Find one small action you can take starting today to set yourself on a path to a fuller life. If you haven't already, I invite you to subscribe to this podcast and leave us a review. It's a free way that you can support this program and help us reach more individuals seeking to live a fuller life. You can also follow us on YouTube and Instagram. Links to both of these are available on our website, thepotentpod.com. And now some inspiration for the week ahead. By declaring that man is responsible and must actualize the potential meaning of his life, I wish to stress that the true meaning of life is to be discovered in the world rather than within man or his own psyche, as though it were a closed system. I've termed this constitutive characteristic the self-transcendence of human existence. It denotes the fact that being human always points and is always directed to something or someone other than oneself, be it a meaning to fulfill or another human being to encounter. The more one forgets himself by giving himself to a cause, to serve, or another person to love, the more human he is and the more he actualizes himself. What is called self-actualization is not an attainable aim at all, for the simple reason that the more one would strive for it, the more he would miss it. In other words, self-actualization is possible only as a side effect of self-transcendence. Taken from Viktor Frankl in his book, Man's Search for Meaning. Until next time, wishing you all the best.